local, and unafraid. This is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
Yes, it is Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon. Tony Marmo in studio here, and I've got your AOL email, Bob. Is that good? Okay, so here's the link. I should have done this already. And then you can let us know, because I want to play some of this with Tony. We talked about it. And there you go. America's debt will lead to the biggest crisis in history. And this came out, this was just last week that Buffett had this at the Berkshire.
By the way, 94 years old, the guy is amazingly sharp as a bison. This guy looks like he's about 74, not 94.
And when I, because I misspoke the other day, I said he bought his first stock 70 years ago. And I listened to it again. No, it was 80 years ago.
Right, when he was 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct.
And his, I listened to that entire audio, and his three points in there, as a matter of fact, maybe as we go, while you're still here this morning, maybe at some point we'll play a little bit coming in now.
Yeah, that's fine.
But then I can at some point skip to the almost the last few minutes of the end, because he recounts 3 points.
Yeah, yeah, they're good ones. We can do that.
Excellent ones.
I don't think there's a sports segment today, unless Bob is a sad Giant fan or a sad Jet fan, which is totally...
I'm pretty much giving up.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the Jet, MetLife Stadium was empty. Well, you know, the Jets are so sad. And the Giants basically don't know how to win after, you know, a 19-point advantage, and they just gave up 33 points in the fourth quarter. Historic, by the way, in football.
Was it really?
So, but before we get to Buffett, I just want to mention, because I brought in a little memento from the Italian Festival for you and Robbie. Sorry, Bob, I didn't know you were here today. I would have brought an extra one. We lucked out with the weather. I have to say,
I kept watching it.
Very fortunate, and it was an overcast day. It rained maybe around 7, but we had one of our biggest crowds, not our biggest crowd,
right?
But it was really a great day, and everyone had a great time.
Usually, when it's that kind of weather like that, people
come out,
but that not only do they come out, but they want to eat the hot food.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, no, we went through, a lot of vendors went through a lot of food. Some of them sold out. And part of our opening ceremony, I need to mention, was a dedication of a park bench in that will be in the T.R. Gallo Park to Nina Poshepak, passed away last year, October 10th.
Yep.
She was the co-founder, along with yours truly, of the Ulster County Italian American Foundation. And in fact, today I need to run back up to Kingston. They're dedicating the second floor of the Ulster County building to Nina. Mm-hmm. They should have dedicated the whole building to her, but that's another story.
Sure.
She was an amazing person, Nina. That was apolitical. She didn't care if you were Republican, Democrat, socialist, communist, didn't matter. She took care of you like you were the most important person in the room.
I always enjoyed having her on the show with me.
Yeah.
And she was on a number of times, whether it was talking about, you know, the county clerk's DMV business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or the history things that were happening with the Mathewis Pearson House. Of course, back maybe it was during COVID when they got the Ulster County mobile office.
Oh, yeah.
Because Ulster County is a big county.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
so I was joking with her one day about, well, you're gonna be learning to drive the, you know, the bus
she
now.
Could. She probably would. She was a quiet leader, just a people person, but also competitive in the sense that she wanted to make the DMV better.
Yes.
And not just a horrendous experience.
She was customer focused.
Exactly. Period. I mean, is that a... Yeah.
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 And it's just like how Brad Kendall is here in Dutchess County.
Exactly.
Customer focused.
Yeah. Jeez. Shocker, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you for your support for the Italian Festival. And, that was number 11 for us, so we're getting at it a little bit.
I wanted to come over, but this time of the year,
it's rough.
I'm trying to get so many of my outside projects wrapped up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you're looking at the weather coming in and, getting stuff done.
Yeah, the next day was a deluge. It was just a washout.
I mean, and that's I got so many great, I'm talking about monster trees on my property.
Yeah.
And if you don't try to keep up with that, those leaves get soaked, and you got, you know, four times as much work to get the damn things cleaned up and away from there.
Yeah, yeah. So,
before, go ahead. Yeah. Before we come to the Buffett segment, you heard me talking about the growth of government.
Yeah.
The numbers that you read to me.
Yeah, pretty staggering.
Are absolutely shocking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, now this counts federal, state, and local employment in a government sector. And I just went back to 1982. I'm sure the numbers are worse if you take it back another decade. But back then, 82, there were 13 million. I'm going to say Reagan was probably in office then, right?
Yep.
And so it spiked up to, in 18 years, it spiked up to 18 million in 2000, right? Y2K. And the increase hasn't been as meteoric, but in 2023, close to today, it's 19.5. I think today it's over 20 million in the country. The high point for the federal government, which I found a little interesting, was 1990 at 3.4 million. 1990, 3.4 million. And, you know, you could say a lot of things about President Bill Clinton, but one of the things I think he did was chop the federal government. And you know, President Trump has taken a lot of gas and heat for doing a fraction of what Clinton did.
Yes.
And so it's a little staggering to me. It's funny, whatever political power party is in office thinks it's a shock. You know, well, the counterpart, the Democrat, cut, I want to say it was close to 500,000 federal workers back in his term in early 2000s, because he realized, you know, it's, and that, by the way, coincidentally, and we're going to talk about this more, the last time the federal government was in balance or profit, slight revenue over expenses, and today, as we know, it's a disaster.
So when Clinton came in, it was the national debt was I think 3.2 trillion.
Yeah.
3.2 trillion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did the math on this the other day. It's now 38 trillion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The debt has increased 11-fold.
Right.
The nation's gross domestic product has only increased 5-fold.
Yeah.
So right there, if you're in business, you know that you have to maintain ratios. You must maintain ratios.
Yeah. You can't spend more than you make.
No.
That's ratio number one.
And what
I mean, people, unless you're out of it. Yeah.
To this day, 40 years later, well, you know, Ronald Reagan doubled the national debt. Well, the interest that we're going to pay on the national debt now is more than Ronald Reagan added to the national debt.
Yeah, yeah.
And the... it was Barack Obama, and after the Great Recession, took the national debt to above 100% of the GDP.
Yeah.
Ratios are absolutely critical.
Yeah.
Because that's how you measure it versus the growth of the population, et cetera. Obama took it to 105%, up from, it was 65%.
Yeah.
And then during the Great Recession, it went to 80%, but then took it to 105% after we had already come out. People forget that we were out of the Great Recession in June of 2009,
right.
5 months into the Obama-Biden administration.
Right.
But that's what I was saying earlier this morning. I am just shocked about how little understanding people have about the journey we've been on for the last 30, 40, 50 years.
But let's talk about that for a minute. Do they not care to understand it, or are they the recipients, of the largesse of the low interest rates, of basically free money, you know, being given to folks in big amounts? So...
And a media that doesn't tell the whole story.
Correct.
How about all of the above? Add it all up, and you know what's the expression? We're treated like mushrooms.
Yeah, exactly. And one of our mutual friends, I won't say the name right now, but calls it monetary methadone. We're just going to put more money into the system.
Yeah.
More money into the system.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, the stock market looks good. You know, Wall Street, Main Street. How does the stock market keep going up with numbers that are so horrible in our country in terms of our fiscal picture?
Right.
And Buffett is 100% right. There is going to be a doomsday coming, and I'm not sure anyone's prepared for it.
When I started ringing this alarm bell, the national debt was somewhere between $8 and $10 trillion.
Oh, God.
I was like, I've been ringing this alarm bell for 16 years, 15, 16 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had, you know, my friend Joe, everybody knows about my friend Joe.
Right.
You know, I said, Joe, you're killing your children and your grandchildren. Oh, don't bring my kids into this. Well, I guess you don't. I guess
the mushroom theory.
I guess, Joe, I guess you don't really love your kids.
Yeah.
I'm serious about that. If people now can't recognize what we've done, you probably heard me talking earlier about, you know, I grew up in the era where the first time home buyer was in their 20s.
Yes.
Then a few years ago, it hit 30. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, it was 33. And in 4 years' time, it jumped to 38 years old before. And the student loan debt that exploded after the Democrats hijacked the entire student loan program back in 2010.
Yeah.
That was Barack Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi. Those are facts. That's not,
it's
not speculation on my part.
Yeah, it's not BS news.
And you cannot discharge student loan debt under bankruptcy for the most part.
Right, right.
Which is part of the federal regulation. It's 7:45. That's even though he's not here, we'll hear from the Zolls with the sports for it, and then back with Tony Marmo here on the Beacon.
He's the voice of the Valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on the Beacon.
7:50 on this stormy Monday morning. A very good time for me to remind you about DSHomeServices.com. DSHomeServices.com, whether it's the Generac automatic generator system or winterizing your home to get ready for the, you know, we know it's coming. The cold weather on its way. Custom care from DS Home Services. Please visit their website today, dshomeservices.com. Don't leave it. Don't be one of those people that leaves it to the last minute. Tony Marmo, it's a Marmo Monday in studio, and glad you're here. And
yeah, course, good to be back, man. I feel like I've been away.
You'll save some of the sports talk for the next time you're in with the Zolls and with Robbie.
Not much good news there on the New York fan side.
Not missing anything.
Nope.
So the other day I started playing some of this Warren Buffett audio from the shareholders meeting last week. We're going to play, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes of it now. We'll talk about it. And then after the 8 o'clock break, we're going to jump forward in it.
Yeah.
Because there's some other points in there about the federal government and just borrowing all this money.
Yeah.
And then at the very end of the clip, he recounts three things, right? Three things that people could and should be doing.
Yeah, on the personal side, which I think is important.
Yes.
But the bigger question is, what are we going to do about it nationally? You know, are the elected officials at the federal level even concerned about it in the least?
No.
I just ran into one that I won't name because, you know, I actually like him. So, but I didn't have the nerve to ask him, what are we doing about the federal deficit? You know, why can't we ask these questions to the federally elected officials?
People literally have been brainwashed that we can, with this modern monetary theory, that we just keep borrowing money.
Yeah, ignore it. Just ignore it. Just keep lobbing more money on top of the debt, debt.
And what's happening is it's crowding out private sector employment and private borrowing.
So many bad things.
So let's hear Buffett talk about this.
Most people believe that when the stock market hits a new high, it's time to celebrate. They see it as a validation, a sign that everything is right with the world. They turn on the television, they see the green numbers, and they feel a little richer, a little more secure. Well, I'm here to tell you that this feeling, as pleasant as it is, might be one of the most dangerous illusions in the financial world today. For decades, investors have been taught to fear market crashes and cheer for bull runs, but they're watching the wrong game. The real threat to your financial future isn't a sudden noisy crash. It's a quiet, relentless sickness that's eating away at the very foundation of our economy. It's a tapeworm, and it's been growing for a long, long time.
Great
that
expression.
Tapeworm is our national debt. For the last 80 years, since I first bought a stock in 1942, I've watched this country perform economic miracles. We have a system, a market system, that has unleashed human potential like nothing else in history. It's a magnificent golden goose. But for that goose to keep laying golden eggs, you have to feed it sound food. And right now we're feeding it a diet of borrowed money and printed dollars. People ask me, Warren, what's the secret to getting rich? The answer isn't a secret at all. It's about owning productive businesses and letting the power of compounding work for you over a lifetime. But there's a catch. That entire formula depends on one thing: the value of the dollar you're compounding. If the measuring stick you're using is shrinking every year, you have to run faster and faster just to stay in the same place. And folks, that measuring stick is shrinking. The policies coming out of Washington today are ensuring it. We are running a fiscal deficit of around 7% of GDP during what is supposed to be prosperous times. This is something that has never happened before in our history outside of a major war. It's behavior that...
Stop the video. So that, Tony, what really caught my ear and eye about that, listening to that, for years I have said, again, if we're talking ratios, our United States economy does well when the federal budget is about 17-18% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
We've been running at 25% of GDP.
Right.
So that's when I heard Buffett say 7% deficit.
Yeah.
He nailed it exactly what I've been trying to convey to listeners for all these years.
Yes.
You can go back. This is not political. This is arithmetic. Didn't he say this is arithmetic?
He did. But I'm going to posture that it is somewhat political because each party has done its share of deficit spending, and neither party is guilty. In fact, I think the Republicans are slightly higher going back. I think I went back maybe to Reagan and looked at this. But each party, it's neck and neck. It's like, you know, 18 million to 12 to 15 million, something like a trillion, yeah, rather.
Trillion.
I wish it was million. And so it is political in the sense that I believe that the parties are trying to just buy votes and buy favor, curry favor, by just giving low-cost money out.
That's true.
I mean,
true.
And what President Trump's trying to do is reverse the export-import ratio. You know, that's the right thing to do.
In September, month ago, our U.S. Treasury actually ran a surplus. but the $1.something trillion on the interest.
Oh, yeah. Knocked it out.
Ate it up.
Yeah. I'm curious, when was the last time we ran a surplus? You know, statistically, somebody should go back and check that.
Yeah, I had the figures.
Before interest is applied,
right?
What is it? EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation.
I mean,
that's it. I mean, again, you don't run your own household like that.
No. It is a crack addiction. It is as deadly as a crack addiction.
Absolutely.
And I contend, just like you said, politicians have gotten people addicted to the crack.
They have. Absolutely.
And that's the way you buy votes.
Exactly. That's exactly the answer. And if you ask a federally elected official, what's your plan? Is there a plan to lower the federal deficit? They're going to say, Yeah, I think so. But I mean, what are they going to say?
They
have no clue.
They have no clue. This government shutdown right now, the garbage. Forget about the $1.5 trillion that Schumer and Jeffries want.
Right.
Before you even get to that, there's still piles of garbage in there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just...
They want another $1.5 trillion on top of that.
Inexcusable. It's inexcusable.
It's 7:58. Bob, let's cue that audio back up again. I want to see what else Buffett says, and then we'll go to the break, and we'll come back and talk about that.
Hey, I'm going to pull back the curtain on how this really works.
This is important.
This isn't about politics. It's about arithmetic. I'm going to explain exactly how the government funds these deficits, how it quietly devalues your savings, and why this process is one of the most significant risks to your long-term prosperity. Most importantly, I'm going to tell you not just what I'm doing about it, but what you can do about it. Because trying to predict when this will all come to a head is a fool's game. The intelligent game is to prepare for it. Let's start with a simple thought experiment. Imagine you own a small piece of a wonderful farm. Every year that farm produces 100 bushels of corn. Your piece entitles you to one bushel. Now, the farm's manager, instead of focusing on growing more corn, decides to start printing more ownership certificates.
We're going to come back. We're going to roll that back and come back and pick it up right there in a minute on Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon.
Wake up informed. It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on the Beacon.
8:07 on the Beacon on this Monday morning. I saw some sunshine out there.
That's
very
oh, yeah.
exciting.
Yeah, we're hopeful that Rick Zolser's golf tournament is going to be rain-free.
Exactly. That is great. So, I got a bit of a sore throat here, Tony. You think I could open this Pinot Grigio for medicinal purposes?
Well, probably
only?
Not on the air, but break.
That's what I meant, like now, you know. So,
yeah.
You have your little your phone there, your little app.
Yeah.
Before we come back to Warren Buffett, give us some of those numbers. Unreal.
Yeah. So we were talking about the GDP earlier.
And the ratios.
And the ratio. We're going to hit that. So $31.5 trillion is our gross domestic product. And earlier we talked about our debt at $38 trillion, which puts us underwater for sure. So the total debt to GDP is 130%.
Actually, worse than I...
Worse.
Worse than I said
worse,
it was.
Worse. So, it's just not good. Total spending to GDP. And again, this is a static number, so to speak. It'd be nice to see this on a trend line, right?
Uh-huh.
38.9% spending to GDP. So, I guess that's an indicator of, you know, are we spending too much? The answer is yes.
Absolutely.
We know that. We just know that. And in terms of our revenue that we have coming in, which, you know, we talked off the air about the tariffs and why those were necessary, because we're getting our butt kicked on import-export. And we're losing a lot of money.
There's another facet to that that the Trump administration, has done a terrible job on.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the fact that from a national security standpoint, for 3 decades, ever since China's admission to the World Trade Organization, most favored nation, back to the Clinton-Gore administration, China has been subsidizing their manufacturers to undercut American manufacturers to bankrupt.
It's their plan.
It is literally economic warfare.
Yeah.
The administration.
But silent.
Silent.
Yeah.
It is economic warfare. I started talking about this again 15, 16, 17 years ago. Where the hell are our legislators to not stand up and recognize what's going on?
Yeah, I think they have their head in the sand. I think they're ignoring the trillions of dollars that we're in debt without a plan for recovery.
Right.
By the way, you're not going to do this overnight, But, you know, let's take 6 years or eight, God forbid, 8 years of a presidential term, and let's try to turn our finances around in this country.
So
stop the bleeding.
So about the year I started driving, we had gone over, that was 1964, we had gone over to Connecticut one time. Now, there used to be hundreds of independent oil distributors, companies, you know, retail outlets, hundreds of them around the country. Over in Connecticut, this is over in Wethersfield, Hartford, outside of, you know, in that area. There, gasoline here was about 26 or 28 cents a gallon. You went over to Connecticut, and you could buy gasoline for 14 cents a gallon.
Wow.
Okay, what were they doing? The major oil companies, of which I think there's eight of them now,
right?
The major oil companies would go region by region. They would come in and they would sell the gasoline at 14 cents a gallon and bankrupt their
smaller
independent distributors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm old enough to remember that, and I've seen this, and I've said this over and over and over again. This is exactly the strategy that China's been using against American producers for years. Back, Tony, when I still had the insurance business, I had clients in the steel fabricating business. They were getting undercut. Now, we're talking about items that are heavy with a lot of shipping cost.
Yeah.
They were losing business to Chinese manufacturers because the Chinese
government
was subsidizing those losses to bankrupt American. When we destroy our manufacturing base, that's our national security.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the tapeworm that Warren Buffett is talking about.
That's one of them.
That's one of them. But it's slow, insidious, and there will come a day of reckoning if we don't figure this out.
If we lose the institutional knowledge, if we put our businesses out of business and we lose that institutional knowledge, we're done for.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm an optimist by nature, but this has got me a little worried.
The good thing is you know, when I was in Kingston,
right,
with you know, Ulster
Boces
the other day,
yeah, that's an
reason for
optimism.
Those young people learning these skills,
right?
But in order for our manufacturers to stay in business, we need those tariffs.
Yeah.
So let's play a little more of Buffett. He was talking about the farm manager and having the, you know, the 100 acres and the bushels of corn.
Growing more corn, decides to start printing more ownership certificates. He prints so many that next year there are twice as many certificates, but the farm still only produces 100 bushels. Your one certificate now only gets you half a bushel of corn. You haven't lost your certificate, but your claim on the farm's output has been cut in half. That's happening to the U.S. dollar. The government is the manager, and the farm is the entire productive capacity of the United States. When the government spends more than it takes in through taxes, it has to get the money from somewhere. It does this by issuing debt treasury bills, notes, and bonds. These are IOUS from the U.S. government. Now, who buys this debt? For a long time, the buyers were you, me, pension funds, and foreign governments who had faith in the full credit of the United States. They were happy to lend us money in exchange for a reasonable interest payment. But the amount of debt we're issuing has become staggering. The numbers are so large, they almost lose meaning, trillions upon trillions.
Yes.
When there aren't enough natural buyers for all this debt at the low interest rates, the government wants to pay. Another player steps in the Federal Reserve. The Treasury issues the debt, and the Fed buys it effectively by creating money out of thin air. This is what people refer to as printing money. It's a little more sophisticated than running a printing press, but the economic effect is the same. The supply of dollars increases dramatically. This process is seductive for politicians. It allows them to promise all sorts of things, new programs, benefits, tax cuts without having to make the unpopular decision to raise taxes mm-hmm. to pay for them. It's the ultimate buy now, pay later scheme. But the bill doesn't come in the form of a statement. It comes in the form of a slow, creeping erosion of your purchasing power. Every dollar you have saved, every dollar in your checking account, every fixed payment you're expecting to receive in the future can buy a little bit less. This isn't a new idea. John Maynard Keynes wrote about it nearly a century ago. He said, by a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate, secretly and unobserved, an important part of the wealth of their citizens.
Let's hold it right there.
Yeah. Scary.
Tony Marmo, of course, if you're just tuning in, we're playing an audio from Warren Buffett from Berkshire Hathaway, and this was last week at mm-hmm. their shareholders meeting that he was talking about this. And the erosion of real earnings that people mm-hmm. have mm-hmm. is even worse than he is saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of that bushel of corn, you know, just in the last few years, not only did the shares get diluted, but yeah. even what you were left with.
It's fractional now.
It's fractional.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's get into Sports Report from the Zolls. Tony Marmo in studio with me, and then back in a minute on the Beacon.
Now, back to Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on the Beacon.
On the Beacon, Tony Marmo, we've been playing the Warren Buffett Berkshire Hathaway from meeting last week. And we'll come back to this. We've skipped almost to the end. We'll pick it up. So you like the fact that he got the two cans of Coca-Cola from him?
I was wondering about that, but you made it very clear.
Berkshire Hathaway is a major shareholder owning approximately 9.3% of Coca-Cola's outstanding shares, making it one of the company's largest investors.
That's amazing.
The stake is a significant part of Berkshire Hathaway's portfolio, with Warren Buffett Company having held Coca-Cola for decades.
He's practicing what he's preaching.
So he's talking about, you know, buying stock in wonderful companies. So let's go ahead and pick this up from here.
That you can understand, buy them at a sensible price, and then sit on them. The liquidity of the stock market is a huge advantage, but people turn it into a disadvantage by trading too often. Mm-hmm. They react to headlines. They listen to so-called experts. Don't do that.
The news.
When you buy a stock, you should be willing to hold it if the market closed for 10 years. The second part of the plan is to manage your own personal finances.
Absolutely.
With the discipline that our government lacks. Avoid debt, especially high interest consumer debt.
Mm-hmm.
If you are borrowing money on a credit card at 18%, the mathematical headwind you face is enormous. You have to be a financial genius just to break even. Mm-hmm. It's far, far better to be ahead of the game, even by a little, than to be behind. When you owe money, you are vulnerable. When others owe you money, or you own equities that represent a claim on future earnings, you are in a position of strength. All my life, I've saved money. That first $10,000 I saved was the hardest, but it gave me the tools to get started. It put me ahead of the race before the gun even went off. Don't run your own personal deficit. The third and final part of
the
plan is the best investment you can possibly make, and it's one that no government can inflate away. Invest in yourself, your own earning power is your most valuable financial asset by far. Whatever skills you have, you can improve them. If you're a great salesman, you can become a better one. If you're a skilled programmer, you can learn new languages. I often tell students that if they just improve their communication skills, both written and oral, they will increase their lifetime value by at least 50%.
Mm-hmm.
It's
amazing.
Like having a 200 horsepower motor and only getting 100 horsepower out of it. Why would you let that happen? Education, new skills, good habits, these are assets that become part of you. They can't be taxed, they can't be stolen, and their value will compound over your lifetime. Your ability to produce for society is your ultimate protection against a shrinking currency, because your services will be worth more in whatever that currency is. So, to summarize, the situation with America's debt is serious. The path we are on is unsustainable, and it is quietly and systematically eroding the value of the savings of every American citizen. It is a tapeworm on our economy. Trying to predict exactly when the day of reckoning will come is a fool's errand. But you don't have to predict, you have to prepare. And the preparation is not complicated. First, own pieces of wonderful, productive businesses mm-hmm. that can protect your purchasing power over time. Second, run your own financial life with discipline and avoid the trap of debt. And third, continuously invest in your own skills and earning power, your greatest asset. This isn't about being bearish on America. I have never been bearish on America, and I never will be. This country's ability to innovate, adapt, and create is unparalleled. That's the cathedral. My warning is about the casino that has been built alongside
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
I love his metaphors.
Fueled by debt and speculation. Don't get distracted by the noise of the casino. Focus on the enduring value of the cathedral, the great productive businesses of this country. If you do that, if you think like an owner and not a speculator,
I love that one.
You will not only survive whatever economic storms come our way, you will prosper. It's that simple.
That's it. So, a couple points in there that people who've known me for a long time would have heard me say over and over and over and over again. Every single day when you get out of bed, see yourself as a self-employed entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
Different way of saying what he said, correct?
Correct.
Lifelong learning.
Yes.
Lifelong learning. Invest in yourself.
Never stops.
Stay up to date with what's going on. And it's both enhances your physical and mental well-being
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, keeps you out engaged with other people. How many times have you reinvented yourself, Tony Marmo, over the years? Seriously.
I don't want to say it on the air. About three.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But that's how life really is.
Yeah, exactly.
And
and the personal financial discipline piece.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, it's nice to have a shiny new something, whatever that is, but do you really need it? You know, is there something semi-shiny that would be just as good and save you a whole bunch of money? I mean, you know, you have to have that discipline unless you have billions or trillions like he does. But I'm going to add, we need to figure out a way to hold our federally elected officials accountable
yes.
for this deficit yes. spending. We yes. have to stop it.
But look what's going on in the media right now. Like I said, before we get to this $1.5
trillion yeah.
that they
yeah.
the budget's already bad to begin with
yeah.
because they didn't do the serious work.
Yeah, and then again, we'd rather talk about the No Kings rally than the horrible financial condition this country is in. From a futuristic standpoint,
right.
I mean, our grandkids, our adult
children. Should I remind listeners that the people who financed the No Kings rally
yeah.
are the same billionaires
yeah.
who have been
please do
who have been profiting
please
from
do.
This excess spending?
Right, exactly.
The 1%?
Yeah.
Less than 1%.
Yeah. I mean, it's not hard to figure out once you put all the pieces together, really. I mean, if you think about it. It's hard to fix because, again, you know, we're on this path to, I'm not sure where we're on the path to, But we're not back to the – we need to get back to the cathedral.
Absolutely.
That Warren was talking about.
And a real danger is the fact that this buy now, pay later scheme on $48 for X item, $12 a month for 4 months. Guess what? When you miss a single payment, now you pay interest on the whole damn thing.
No, it's it's right in front of us. We just need to get at it.
You're heading down the hall to spend a little time with
Bob Miller. Yeah, I'm going to say hi to Bob
Miller.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you being here this morning.
This is great. This is
really
great talk.
Important stuff.
Absolutely, Tom. So, thank you so much.
You're
Bob,
welcome.
Nice meeting you. And you know, we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, sounds good to me. Listeners,
thanks.
Don't go anywhere. Refresh those beverages. Maybe I have to sip on my Pinot Grigio.